Hello, everybody. Welcome to Geek Tyrant Weekly. This is podcast number 58 in the new year. This is the first podcast of 2010. Yo.
Are you going 2010 or are you going 2010? Are you going to go flip-flop back and forth?
Shoot.
I think it should be 2010, personally.
Really?
Yeah.
Are we stamping this as 2010?
I'd say 2010. That's how they say it in sci-fi films, previous to 2000.
Should we put it in our style guide?
And the Sundance guide this year is like Sundance 2010.
2010. All right.
I think it's cool.
2010 it is.
All right.
Yeah.
You've heard it here first.
Would it be really bad if I call it 2010?
Go binary on it.
So we're going to quickly go through the top two of the new year.
Of this weekend?
Of this weekend.
We got so much stuff to cover, we don't want to go through the whole top ten.
And you've heard everything, you know. You know what's out there, you know what's being made.
Well, nothing new has
come out. Nothing new came out, so I just want to quickly point out that Avatar came in $68.3 million, bringing its grand total worldwide to $1,018.73.
Awesome.
Is that before or after tax?
So it's made its way into the top four highest grossing films of all time, and will most likely work its way up to number two. At least that's what I think.
Yeah. And one of you guys wrote up a post saying that it was the fastest to do that.
Yeah,
they
did it in 17 days.
Yeah.
It made that.
It's almost 18 days.
It's almost 18 days. And
pretty impressive.
And James Cameron is the only director to have made two movies.
Yep.
To be
in the billion dollar club. Yeah.
So
it's already the fourth highest.
So congratulations to Mr. Cameron and the Avatar crew of greatness.
Yeah, I think I speak for everyone when I say that we're not going to be surprised when it finally moves its way up into like the number two spot right behind Titanic, because it's still in theaters and it's not going to leave theaters anytime soon. And with the way people keep wanting to go back and see this movie again and again, I'm pretty much guaranteeing that it's going to get up there.
Boom.
Yeah. You know what's kind of cool is Descartes, in his review of Avatar, he gave these little facts about the budget of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And James Cameron has always been the one setting the kind of the benchmark. Like, it was the first $100 million movie he made, T2.
Mm-hmm.
First $200 million movie was Titanic. And was it the first $300 million, or is it like the highest in the $300 millions?
Yeah, I think it's like just generally regarded as the most expensive movie ever made right now. So Cameron, innovator.
Yeah. Do you guys think it has a possibility of being number one?
Yeah. I think
Let's just put things in perspective. Titanic is $1.8 billion.
Yeah.
There's a possibility. There really is. And it might get close. But I don't know. Maybe it will. There is a possibility.
We're not even into a month.
I know. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
It will lose some momentum, obviously. But most people who watch this film say, I want to watch it again.
Yeah.
Immediately right after. There's like almost no question just because of how much you're seeing.
And I think the movie is made in a way that any type of people that want to watch it, a bootleg version or download it.
You can't really do it.
Or pirate it.
Yeah.
And you don't want to.
They're not going
to
get the same effect. It's not going to be as good. People want to see this in 3D on the big screen.
What do you mean? What do you mean, you people?
Experience.
What do you mean by you people?
The pirates.
Okay. Yeah.
The pirates.
Yeah. I've also heard some speculation that it'll be re-released this year, like later this year after it leaves theaters, just because everybody wants to see it again.
Just because 3D, they can.
Like a summer like a summer release.
Mm-hmm. It'd be amazing if they did an extended release and they put like Deadpool at the end of the movie. Awesome.
Alternate endings, yeah.
Yeah.
And number two this weekend, Sherlock Holmes came in at $38.3 million.
The witness stated that he saw Lord Blackwood rise from the grave.
I want you to find him and stop him.
That'll take every ounce of my not inconsiderable experience.
This may be a hobby to you, Mr. Holmes, but I do it for a living.
It does make a considerable difference to me, having someone with me on whom I can thoroughly rely.
It was nice to see you, Watson.
You've never complained about my methods before?
I never complain. When do I complain about you practicing the violin at 3 in the morning? Or your mess?
your general lack of hygiene or the fact that you steal my clothes.
I need you to remain calm and trust me, I'm a professional. But beneath this pillow lies the key to my release.
Now, we were all out, so we didn't talk about Sherlock Holmes. We just want to go through it real quick.
I just quickly want to say that I thought it was a good movie. I like the Guy Ritchie is still a good director. Because
mm-hmm.
I haven't been impressed by him since Snatch. I mean, Snatch was the last film that I really loved of his until Sherlock Holmes came along. And it shows that, you know, he's always worked with these small budget films. Sherlock Holmes is his first big budget, and I think he proved that he's got what it takes to make a really good, decent, big budget film. So I'm actually happy that he was able to go out and prove himself that, look, I am still a good director.
Yeah.
Please come see my movie.
But, but I mean, I love the way Sherlock Holmes has been updated. I love how Watson is not this bumbling little assistant guy. He's really, you know, they're really a duo.
Mm-hmm. See, now I was hoping that they would get Jason Alexander to play Watson because that would have been awesome.
It's driving me crazy, Sherlock! It's driving me crazy!
Yeah. So that being said, for me, the production values were a bit flat. It felt like, I think people said, it felt like Shanghai Nights
mm-hmm. yeah.
in terms of production value. I did notice there were some effect shots that felt purposely blurry.
Yeah, yeah. I could tell some of that.
And the ending for me, even though I like this film and I would recommend this film, it felt like they were trying way too hard to get the sequel in place.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And
I heard they went 10 minutes into the next film. No? Am I wrong?
No.
Okay.
But they allude to it way too much. And then the fact that they introduce Moriarty in the film as an element pretty much deflates the
yeah,
the,
it's like you're going to get
the
a
villain,
the
yeah.
impact of the whole first one.
Yeah. Exactly. So it doesn't really, you don't really.
I mean, this sets it up. I mean, this is what, I guess you'd almost say this is like the origin story of a villain. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the next film, you're going to get that.
Yeah, at least it lays the groundwork for. There's a lot of different directions they could go in.
Oh,
they
yeah.
could do like almost a prequel back to. Well, I guess this series in itself is kind of like a reboot of. I mean, there's been other Sherlock Holmes movies in the past, but nothing on this scale. And
I know. Did you see Young Sherlock Holmes?
I did not. No,
well, you
I
should
didn't.
Watch Young Sherlock Holmes. That's a Steven Spielberg classic, by the way.
Okay. All
right. Now, I didn't see Sherlock Holmes. I chose to nap off some calories
mm-hmm.
That I had attained the night before. But a lot of people are calling... Well, I've read a comment or two saying that Robert Downey Jr.'s performance is kind of like a very Johnny Depp-esque. Would you consider it that?
I consider
no,
it
pure
very
Downey
Jr.
This is pure
it's
Downey.
Him with an English accent.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah,
it's Tony Stark with an English
okay.
accent.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Johnny Depp does English accents, so it's Johnny Depp.
I thought he was actually channeling a little bit of Hugo Weaving from V for Vendetta. I don't know if you guys picked up on that vibe, like just with the accent and stuff. Not with character, obviously, but I don't know. There were some
yes.
times when he was, you know, in all Sherlock Holmes lore, there's the part at the end, the big exposition where he kind of reveals step by step how he put everything together. And while it was going on, the film, you know, you see on the screen, it flashes back to these different points where he picks up clues and things of that sort. But his narration is still going over the top of it. And you hear, like, this English accent. I don't know. I just thought it sounded kind of reminiscent.
So for those
of,
who
like,
haven't
yeah,
seen
Hugo
this,
Weaving.
Just imagine Columbo explaining the end.
Columbo explaining
You know he always does it? Well, and you know, yeah.
Both my eyes are glass eyes.
Who
I apologize.
Columbo anymore?
Yeah, that's a reference.
Still got my Columbo jacket.
Lost on
me. You just showed your age, by the way.
I was watching the
we
I
named,
just joking.
I named my first pet Columbo, so you suck it.
I don't know. As far as like my overall impressions of the movie, I definitely liked it. I think it was Guy Ritchie playing into the kind of typical Hollywood formula, but at the same time adding his personal touch to it. I feel like this could have been directed by a lot of different people, you know, the Brett Ratners of Hollywood.
Thank
but,
goodness that didn't happen.
Yeah, but he, Guy Ritchie, I mean, it's not, this is definitely his most mainstream work, I think, because the movies, like you said, Lock, Lock, Stock, and Snatch, and those rock and roller and things like that, they're geared towards a very different audience mm-hmm. than Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes is a, you know, it's a holiday movie. It's everybody wants to go see this. You know, that's
everybody wants to go see Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, they're gearing towards a lot
wider. So
they're
obviously planning more films.
Yeah.
Has it been mapped out? Is there a larger story?
Who knows? Who knows what Warner Brothers has got up their little sleeves of theirs?
It's been rumored that Brad Pitt will play.
Yeah. I had heard that beforehand, and I was kind of disappointed. Well, spoiler alert. A small spoiler. Or lack thereof spoiler
alert. Yeah, you're going to see him in the trailer is what they're going to do.
Well, no, I was just talking about for actual the movie that we watched. I was disappointed that Brad Pitt didn't make a cameo, because I had heard those rumors as well. And I was kind of expecting at the very
end
the big
reveal.
The way they've
done it is just basically anyone could be.
Yeah, it's like
Party.
Yeah. Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be awesome. Sign me up. I will see that. But I thought Downey did a great job.
Yeah, I did too. I like Jude Law in it. Mm-hmm. He was fun to watch. And for me, I think Rachel McAdams is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Totally forgettable character almost. I just...
At the time, I thought her character was a pretty strong female character. She didn't... It's not like the typical female character in these types of movies where she's completely reliant on the hero to, you know, to move her story along. I felt like she was a very separate personality that you know, it was alluded to a couple times that she had gotten the better of Sherlock Holmes like two times before or something. So it didn't play her up as the typical damsel in distress, and I really appreciated that while watching it. But ultimately, I think you're right. Like, she's definitely going to get swept under the rug.
Yeah, it was like there's no weight to it. You know, I don't know. It's one thing I noticed. Anyway, so what we're gonna do is we are going now that we're in 2010.
Wait, should we talk before that? Should we talk about It's Complicated real quick?
Why?
It's funny.
It's actually a good film.
Really okay, go for it.
Knowing how to be divorced is next to impossible.
Not that I want him back.
Of course not.
He cheated on you. Your 20-year marriage ends. And then he marries her.
My marriage is not turning out as I hoped. She got me booked at the fertility center every other day.
Jacob Adler. Have fun.
I'm having an affair with a married man.
You're not saying.
Oh, yes, I am. Turns out, I'm a bit of a slut.
Is this a great affair or what?
I don't know. It's my first. What about the fact that I'm now the other woman? I'm the one we hate.
He was yours first.
True.
I think this is very French of us.
Oh, my God.
I have a young wife, but I'm having sex with my old wife. My old, you know, ex.
Talk about it.
I like that reaction.
Coming in number
five. Well, a few podcasts before, we had totally just discredited Blindside, and then what happened? We watched the film, and
for the record, I haven't seen It's Complicated. I still will most likely wait till it's on DVD, mm-hmm. most likely. Maybe even till it's on HBO, even though I have been hearing good buzz about it. It's still a movie that I just really don't think I'm going to go out of my way to see, but let's see.
Only reason we went in the first place, because this has... It's Complicated. When you see it, you go, this, other than the great comedic actors, has really nothing to really offer our demographic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Males in their 20s, 30s.
Yeah.
So when we're going in, I'm like, okay, I had really low expectations, and it had everything that you could want in a great comedy.
Yeah.
Really? I am shocked to hear this.
Like, Alec, this is like the funniest Alec Baldwin performance I've seen.
Yeah.
And I'm... It's talking over 30 Rock as well. It just has so many moments that are purely... There could not be another actor to do this.
It's the Alec Baldwin, John Krasinski show.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Even though the emotional core of the whole film is held firmly by Meryl Streep's character, which is... The whole thing is interesting, and they approach it in a believable manner other than the fact that, you know, these two exes are getting back together.
Yeah, I think a lot of people thought that Nancy Myers, the writer-director, kind of lost her touch after The Holiday, which was like I think every familiar, predictable thing you could put into a movie.
Hey, I'm not really a champion of chick flicks, but I enjoyed The Holiday.
Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, The Holiday, it's just like vanilla ice cream. It's just like,
Let me take that back.
Do not say vanilla ice cream.
On a podcast.
On a podcast. How dare you, sir? Yeah. I just really quickly want to say that I watched The Holiday off of Mazur's recommendation. I didn't like it at all.
I liked let me clarify my point. I liked Kate Winslet's storyline in The Holiday. Cameron Diaz and Jude Law didn't really care for, but Kate Winslet and Jack Black I really enjoyed.
But here's the other thing.
Anyway.
Neither did my wife.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah. Which surprised the hell out of me, because she likes everything.
Yeah. Okay. I know, yeah. Well,
for us, it's complicated. Great, great film. I recommend... Yeah, kind of put your reservations aside, because Alec Baldwin at his funniest. John Krasinski, the character they gave him, he's kind of the future son-in-law, but he's kind of been part of the family for a while. They kind of allude to the fact that he's been around for a while, and he has to play kind of the confidant. And like some of these, there's like two or three scenes that just escalate and escalate.
Yeah,
that he is pretty much kind of part of.
And there's also a really good performance by Steve Martin in this film. Who fills a character very earnestly without attempting to go for laughs or try to steal the scenes from the characters who need to own those scenes.
Yeah.
So, very good performances. And
I think my only grumblings with it, and this could just be not knowing how the female world works, but there's three characters that were, like, throwaway characters, that like, they're Meryl Streep's, like, group girlfriends who... who are magically not a part of any other part of her life, except they just come over and they kind of just give each other gossip, and she gets to declare that she's kind of a slut.
And but I can say for my own lady, that happens. Like, she'll just get together with just her friends, and they'll just meet, and they'll just talk, and then that's it. Like, they don't... Because, you know, these are mothers and all the sorts of stuff, so they don't have the time to just randomly hang out or... Sex in the City, have their lunches together or something like that. It's more...
I just felt like if they were condensed into one character that actually moved the story along, and instead of them just spitting out expletive about her former life or her life before the
divorce.
But
how many times have we seen the female best friend confident? And it would have removed John Krasinski's character, I think, out of it. So, yeah. Anyway, let's move on.
So there you have it. It's complicated.
Cool.
Okay, so what we're going to do now, we're going to go through my list, Venkman's list, of the top 10 films of 2009. We're going to use this list as a base, go down the list. We got, you know, three other guys here that are going to chime in, give us their thoughts.
We might reference some comments.
What they would place in place of other movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's going to be like a puzzle. It's going to be like Legos. It's going to be fun.
Cool.
So... Well, I hope it is.
Yeah. That's good too.
What are Legos not fun? Let's be honest here.
You want to start at number 10 then?
Let's start at number 10, shall we?
Well, right. It's not in any particular order, is it? Or is it?
Well, yeah, let's start at number 10. Let's do it in particular order.
All right, we'll base this off of his list, and then we'll just throw our...
Number 10, A Serious Man.
Yes.
I haven't seen this film.
Didn't see it either.
I didn't know what to expect from this movie when I went and saw it in the theaters. Abe Froman and I went and saw it. But I left the theater enjoying the hell out of this thing. It kept you thinking. I want to see it again. I've only seen it once, but I want to see it again because I'm sure there's just a ton of stuff in it that I just totally didn't even catch the first time around.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But it's one of those films that really makes you think about... everything, not just about the film, but about life and about chaos and how everything works and, you know, stuff like that, which is why I really enjoyed it.
Well, I just like the fact and all the best screenplay wins that it's been getting in the critic circle, that it doesn't treat you like a kid. You know, the elements and of the story that they show you, you have to kind of somewhat pay attention to actually get and appreciate. And I'm glad they don't shove certain things down your throat that I think a lot of other directors would have done or writers would have done. So I just appreciate that. It's good filmmaking. The Coens know what they're doing, even if they know it's probably not going to make a lot of money.
Exactly. It's not going to make a lot of money, and it's not good filmmaking. It's
They choose subjects that are not like going to be cool or sexy. They're just trying to find good stories.
Exactly. Exactly, which is very cool. It's why it's in my top 10.
And like we said, podcasts prior when we reviewed the film more in depth, one of the best endings of the decade.
Oh, yeah. Which, yeah, definitely loved it. So, you know, there's a lot. There were a lot of movies up for the number 10 spot, but that's the one that I had to go with.
Cool. Yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out. I mean, you're not the only person that I've heard it's fantastic from, so.
Number 9 on the list is The Brothers Bloom. Now, this movie, I have had this movie in my mind since I watched it in theaters. I love this movie. As soon as I watched it, I said, this is definitely one of my favorite movies of the year. Hands down.
Yeah.
I don't know how it couldn't be. I haven't seen it on very many other lists, though.
Did this come out early 2009?
May.
Yeah, for some reason, this just feels like this came out way before. And I love this film. I love this filmmaker. There was just, I think it was overshadowed by so many other films this year.
It was.
Well, it came out right before summer hit. I think it came out right before maybe Star Trek.
Yeah.
Came out.
Yeah, exactly.
For me, this movie, it reminds me a lot of, as far as like release structure and things like that, it reminds me of In Bruges from last year. Because that was a movie that was also very, very like strikingly original, you know, kind of darkly comedic here and there.
In Bruges is a type of pudding, by the way.
Okay. All right.
Continue. I could be wrong.
It's not a fact. You're not a cook. But, yeah, I think you're right. Like, if this had come out towards the end of the year, I think it would be on a lot more people's lists. This movie is either the number one or the number two on my personal list for this year. Like, I love nice. The Brothers Bloom so much. I watched it on DVD when it came out, and, well, I saw it in a theater, of course, and then I watched it on Blu-ray, actually, when it came out. And, like, this movie, it's right there next to Inglourious Basterds for me as the best movie of the year, and they keep swapping back and forth, you know, day by day, and which one is better on my personal list. But this movie, along like just like Inglourious Basterds, has so many layers to it.
It does.
And
the characters are so rich,
they're
too.
They're great,
and
yeah.
And the dialogue.
The
I
writing
love.
Is fantastic. Ryan Johnson is
he's
just
amazing.
Yeah, I cannot wait for his first sci-fi film, Looper, to come out. That's the
yeah.
next one that he's doing.
Nice. Well, I'm just glad that is. Brothers Bloom is definitely a bit more palpable or easy to digest rather than Brick. You know, mm-hmm. I think Brick, I love Brick, but
as a debut film,
yeah,
it's immensely strong.
A lot of people felt, though, it's too, with the dialogue, I think a lot of people just didn't get it.
Yeah.
But The Brothers Bloom, I think anybody can just that opening 10 minutes
yeah.
is amazing, just with these kid actors.
Mm-hmm.
Max Records, actually, played a young Mark Ruffalo. And then Where the Wild Things Are, he bites. No, he hates himself, pretty much.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Brothers Bloom, because it's a con man movie, is a lot more relatable to general audiences than Brick was, which is, you know, Brick was so, like, it was dripping with the conventions of film noir and just completely immersed you in this world of dialogue that was going by so quickly that you had to... To like just you were swept along, and if you couldn't catch up, they
we
didn't
went to
care.
The movie,
that
they,
movie kept going.
When we went to the movie, they actually handed out little pamphlets.
Oh, that's
of
awesome!
What they were saying meant.
I wish cool. I knew where mine was.
I don't know where mine.
That's
yeah.
really cool.
But yeah, Ryan Johnson introduced the film, and when we saw The Brothers Bloom too, he introduced the film.
Yeah,
as well.
That's cool.
Number 8 on my list is probably one of the best comedies I've seen in a long time. The Hangover.
The highest grossing comedy
of all
time.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely highest
yeah.
grossing comedy of all time, but it was also hilarious. I don't know who went and saw this movie and didn't like it. I don't know anybody
that may have not expected.
Zach Galifianakis' parents. Ken Jeong's parents.
No, I'll give you this. I love this movie when it came out. The only thing that I... And this can't be... This is not the fault of the movie, but it's become one of those films that a certain subsect of the population has attached themselves to.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to Borat, where it's like being overquoted to the point of like eye rolling, and like that's what I hate. That's kind of the negative part about fandom sometimes, is like certain people will just drive things into the ground, and it almost ruins the original like experience for you. But when you go back and watch this movie, it's freaking hilarious.
Well, I haven't seen Napoleon Dynamite since I first bought it on DVD because of that reason.
Right.
Being overly quoted and
yeah.
misquoted. And
mm-hmm.
every single person.
Oh.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Bradley Cooper was a standout here. It's good
yeah,
to see him because I've been a fan of his since Alias.
This,
you know?
This movie, he's been in a lot of films before this, but this one definitely put him on the map. And mm-hmm. since this movie, He's gotten a lot more offers on roles.
Yeah.
Same with Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, it was Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah, we've been a fan of his stand-up for like 7 years, 8 years.
Yeah.
Like he's been on our radar for a long time, and he's just like...
But as far as the mainstream...
Thank gosh he's had a breakout role, because like, man, this guy needs to be in more things, and he's always played the kind of minor character and sidekick kind of thing, so...
Yeah, and sometimes he's just a guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And they are working on a sequel. They're prepping that up, and apparently it's going to take place in Tibet.
Wow. Okay.
So we'll see how that goes.
Okay.
See how that goes. But definitely laughed in that movie all the way through it, beginning to end. It's hilarious. Number 7, Moon. Now this is a movie that unfortunately isn't getting the love it deserves. Sony Pictures Classics actually didn't send out screeners to any of the Academy members.
Wow.
Thus, way to show some faith.
Thus, not allowing this movie to be seen by people that need to see it to vote for the Oscars.
Right.
Because, one, the movie was brilliant. Two, Sam Rockwell gave the best performance of his career and should win, and definitely the best performance of the year. And I think he should win.
Yeah.
George Clooney is up for it, will probably be nominated for Best Actor for Up in the Air, and he was good in that, but he was not as good as Sam Rockwell in Moon.
How about Jeremy Renner, Hurt Locker? You think
he was good, but I still want to see Sam Rockwell win for Moon.
Yeah,
his performance was
his dual performance.
Yeah, his dual performance,
and you believe each character, which is weird.
You look at Tom Hanks and Castaway. He carried that movie all by himself. You know, 75 minutes of Tom Hanks on an island, and he was able to carry you through it. Sam Rockwell is the only guy in this movie, and he carries you all the way through it. Amazing performance. And I'm just so upset that he's not going to be recognized for that.
Yeah, for me, this would be... It's not your number 7. For me, this would be my number 4. So
nice.
I didn't get a chance to see it, but I've heard nothing but amazing things. I'm really looking forward to it, especially for a directorial debut too.
Yeah, also, definitely. To see what they did with such a modest budget,
$5 million, and the movie looks like it was made for $30 million,
which is interesting because you see, let's say, a film like Avatar.
Mm-hmm.
You don't feel like you don't wonder where the money went. You feel like every penny is on the screen, and you see that with District 9, which is completely. And Moon, which are completely on the opposite end of the budget, but...
Or you look at something like, I think we talked about, did you hear about the Morgans, which cost $60 million.
Yeah. Which is like, obviously there's some kind of, who knows...
Everybody's just wondering that money goes.
Everybody, the money's being pocketed.
Craft services must have been awesome. Must have had like a crepe bar.
They got Wolfgang Puck.
Yeah.
not his assistant either.
So yeah, if you... Get a chance to see Moon. It hits DVDs. It comes out on DVD, I think, later this month. Go rent this thing. Buy it.
Buy it. This is a classic sci-fi film. And another thing is, I listen to the soundtrack every now and again. It's an eerie soundtrack.
Yeah, look at this. It should be nominated for Best Original Score. It should be nominated for Best Picture. It should be nominated Best Actor. Nominated Best Director.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Since Duncan Jones is David Bowie's son, any Bowie on the soundtrack that I can expect?
No, there's no Bowie.
Number 6 on my list.
Changes!
Is Avatar?
Changing to number 6.
Avatar made my number 6.
My number 1.
Your number 1.
My number 1.
Wow, look at you go. Look at you go with your number 1.
Yeah. For me, just knowing the amount of effort and knowing all the technology involved, it blows my mind. But just in every aspect...
Have you seen it 3 times already?
Yeah.
Twice.
I've seen it twice. I'm going to see it again at least 2 more times this week and then...
Wow.
Someone has extra time.
Yeah.
Major's usually crazy busy.
Yeah, like, exactly.
No, I am, but I'm going to make time to watch it.
The guy's moving and getting married within the next couple weeks. Makes time for Avatar, though.
Yeah. Still got time to check out a 2-hour.
Which is funny, she'll watch it with me. Twice. She'll watch it with me, which is the funny part.
It just shows you how much she loves you.
Yeah, there you go.
I love Avatar, obviously, but... You guys can chime in on your
I loved it. I mean, it's definitely one of the best movies of the year. It's changed cinema. It's taking movies to a whole new level, just like James Cameron said it would. Only problem is
it's not a perfect film, obviously.
Yeah, the only problem is there's only a handful of people out there that will be able to, you know, take what he's done with this and you know, combine it.
We're probably not going to see another filmmaker be able to even touch these types of tools for maybe like three more years.
Exactly. So right now, James Cameron is the only guy that we can expect he's
sitting on top of the pile.
I mean, obviously they've got this stuff was developed and they got. I mean, parts of it are at Digital Main and ILM and Weta. So I mean, there's all these tools out there, but no one has their fingers into all of them.
Exactly.
Like he does. So.
Well, we can just take solace in the fact that we'll see the technology used again relatively soon in Jackass 3D.
Yeah.
Well, just the cameras.
Well, Venker posted a thing on John Hillcoat's project that just fell through, but something like this could literally save cinema, save the movie industry if they
could utilize this properly.
You can't see a movie not in theaters, pretty much. I said, like, the Avatar, I don't think I'm even going to buy it on DVD. I might.
I mean, I will, but I will feel like I own the lesser copy because I cannot watch it in 3D.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And even then, you know, if you have a DLP projector that is 3D ready and you're able to have the shutter display, the shutters are not as good as the wave frequency, right? Yeah, the wave frequency, you'll have all that stuff in there because you're seeing the image at the same time. Your brain...
This movie has to be seen on the big screen. If it's not, you've lost out on the whole experience of Avatar. Yeah. Period. Yeah. So, great film, though. We've seen the story 1,000 times before, but it's never been told so epically. So, number 5, District 9. This is Neil Blomkamp's breakout film.
First feature.
First feature, and... blew me away with it. This is, you know, for a film like this that took $30 million and it looks better than a, you know, $200 million special effects tentpole film like G.I. Joe.
Yeah. My number three.
This movie blew me away.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I think I'd put it at number 4 for me personally, but yeah, unbelievable. Like, especially, I mean, Neil Blomkamp, it's such a... unique movie. Like, we've never seen anything quite like this before, from everything down to the setting to the kind of the floating ships in the back. Like, I remember when the trailer came out and the movie was in theaters and the Avatar trailer had just come out and people were saying, like, wow, the District 9, like, the imagery in District 9, like, might overtake the imagery in Avatar. All right, we all know that didn't happen, but that's
seemed
not
plausible.
It did at the time. And District 9, I mean, it's beautiful. The ship just like hovering over the entire city, and if you go back and watch Alive in Joburg, which is the short film that District 9 was based on, the effects in that are pretty amazing too. And that had, like, I'm guessing nowhere near the budget of the full-length movie. I'm not going to throw out a number because I don't know what it really is, but...
$17.
Something else we got to...
5 cents.
Neil Blomkamp did all those effects himself in the original short. So I just think his vision was wonderfully realized on the screen in District 9.
I do too.
Something else we got to see that we didn't, you know, if you don't realize... This was the first time we got to see a Peter Jackson produced, because he wasn't an executive producer, just kind of was just writing the check or just putting some muscle behind it. Mm. He was there on set with Neil, and it was a collaborative effort.
Exactly, and this movie was also born from the failed attempts of doing Halo.
Which is frustrating when you see District 9 and you see some of these, like, the gun, just super weapon, and you're like... There could have been
this Halo movie would have been
badass, you know, like the Master Chief, and it's just a pain. And you're like, okay, well,
at least something.
F for you, Microsoft.
Seriously, guys.
Yeah. So,
but yeah,
it's unfortunate that didn't happen, but fortunate that we got an original story, you know, brought to us.
Absolutely. Said.
So, awesome.
Isn't it great? Three original, well, mostly original stories. This year for sci-fi.
Yeah.
I mean, I think earlier last year I was talking about When was the last time something original came out?
Exactly. Yeah. It used to be like Predator first came out, or Alien, or you know, any of these old
school... I think
what
was the last thing was Matrix.
Yeah,
I think that was the last thing, and that was 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. 99. Yeah,
so
yeah,
now finally people are starting to like be open to the idea of new ideas.
A good trend. I hope it continues.
I know, right?
Oh, Sunshine. That was good.
Oh, Sunshine was great. Number four on my list is The Hurt Locker. The reason this is on, one, it was a great film, but this movie, from beginning to end, I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. I was just in this movie, I was in the world, and wow, it just...
I have not sweated this much in that film.
Right?
Like, I was, my whole body was tense. Wow. Just watching this film. It's talk about suspense and just like the character. I mean, just such an amazing performance. I don't think I've really Jeremy Renner.
Yeah,
I don't think I really saw him in too many things. And if I mean,
the only movie I remember him in, like in my mind, was SWAT, mm-hmm. which I didn't like.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I looked at his IMDb page and I was just like, really? Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. And it just wasn't really anything that made me go, oh, yeah, Jeremy Renner.
Right? Yeah, exactly. But now, you're like, oh, yeah, Jeremy Renner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel kind of in the minority on this, and a lot of people in the comment section are probably going to rail on me for this, but I did not love this movie nearly as much as you guys did or the critical community did. I don't know. It's something about, like, you're talking about sweating in the theater and being so, like, intense from beginning to end. I certainly wasn't bored with it, uh-huh. but I did not have that same visceral reaction I don't know. There was just something about it. I was like, okay, this is good.
In the screening that Mazur and Venkman went to, they put actual bombs in the theater.
All right.
It kind of got the electricity of the air.
Drastically changes the circumstances. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, Catherine Bigelow was I'll definitely, you know, acknowledge her great job directing and all that stuff. And the writing was solid. Jeremy Renner was fantastic. And Anthony Mackie was great too, who I'd never even really heard of, who was his sergeant or whatever, of his platoon or bomb squad or whatnot. But there was, I mean, and certain sequences, yes, were great, like especially the Guy Pearce thing in the beginning with the slow motion, that was awesome, and then specifically I'm thinking of the sniper thing where it just turns into like them like sitting there for hours on end and like, you know, locked in this battle with like across a desert plain. That was pretty great. But overall, I did not have this kind of, you know, overwhelming love for the movie that everybody else
now
did.
There's two movies that I think are going to be two major contenders for the Oscars this year.
Mm-hmm.
The Hurt Locker and Up in the Air.
I agree with you on Up in the Air, definitely.
And
no, I agree with you about The Hurt Locker,
too,
just because of
But you would probably choose Up in the Air above
yes,
The Hurt Locker.
Yes,
see, I would choose The Hurt Locker above Up in the Air.
Okay, all right. Okay. Agreed,
interesting.
Yeah.
Put the knives down.
You're still friends.
I'm still just kicking myself that I missed my screening for The Hurt Locker, so.
Yeah. Bastards. Number three.
Speaking of bastards.
Yeah, Inglourious Bastards. Tarantino's best film. In my opinion,
I
will definitely back that.
Yeah.
I did.
Okay,
I put it in.
I put it there. Yeah. Everyone was kind of quiet.
Yeah.
Like I just put it out there for everybody.
We had a big argument about this at when we were out to eat. I think we had a friend of ours who was like, "Well, better than Pulp Fiction," and I'm like, "Yeah, better than Pulp Fiction."
I'd say better than Pulp Fiction, but not as important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Historically, obviously.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that. I think. All right, the conversation that you guys had better than Pulp Fiction. I had it out with somebody in the comment section of my favorites of the decade.
I saw that,
and I'll agree that I think Inglourious Basterds is better than Pulp Fiction. The way that you said it's more important historically, I think that's relevant because of the fact that up until that point we had not really seen the cross cutting of stories and the kind of chronal, like, time shifting
mm-hmm.
of different stories being told at different times. I mean, you see examples of this now. It's become a cliche since Pulp Fiction was released, but that was the first, like, you know, quote-unquote mainstream movie. It was an independent movie, but broke out in the mainstream that really did that in a spectacular way. And
while Tarantino had broken ground with Reservoir Dogs, I don't think he came to anyone's mind previous to that till Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
And also, I think it also brought many actors together
mm-hmm.
and introduced them in a way that I think launched some careers.
Yeah
definitely.
Or rebooted some.
Yeah.
John Travolta.
Yep. Yeah, but I think Inglourious Basterds is being shined upon right now by a lot of critics. And I think that love and praise will only grow as the years go by.
I agree.
Like, this movie blew my mind.
Every time I watch it, I just...
Yeah, I'm one of those people that didn't really become a Tarantino fan until very recently. Like, I'd seen a lot of his stuff, and I, you know, and I'm ashamed to say this now, but I was in the camp of, like, you know, putting him in that box of just, like, using certain styles and not really contributing anything original to the specific genres that he did. Because he does a lot of genre work. I mean, Kill Bill, those two, and then Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs, and you got these gangster stories and things of that sort. Obviously, Bastards, the World War II movie, and Jackie Brown, the kind of black exploitation, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. But seeing Jackie Brown in particular, which I didn't see when it came out in 97, but saw it recently, like, kind of opened my eyes to, you know what, he's not just making these genre films, he's making, like, it's not just a send-up of the genre, it's his love of those genres, and the movie that he makes is also an entry into that genre as well, which is a lot more, you know, important and impressive than somebody else just doing something like Black Dynamite, for example, which I didn't see, but you know, I can kind of gauge from the trailers that it's not nearly as important.
It's a spoof,
yeah,
more of a spoof than it is in the genre,
right?
Yeah, I agree.
And I think Inglourious Basterds, I mean, I'll say it again. I just think it's going to grow with importance as the years go. I think this movie, especially like the last line or whatever he says, where he's like, "This may be my masterpiece" or something. I would have been so pissed at seeing that. You know, when I wasn't a Tarantino fan, I would have been like, God, this guy is such, like, he's so far up his own ass. But, after watching Inglourious Basterds, like, yep, yes, it is your masterpiece. That was brilliant.
And he's currently writing the prequel. Mm-hmm. It won't be his next film, but he is writing the prequel. Last we heard, he's about 40 pages in.
One more thing I want to say about Inglourious Basterds real quick. I was shocked that he got it made in the time frame that he did, because I don't know if you guys remember when he announced.
He's like, I'm gonna have it done by Cannes.
I was like, there is no way. I was like, generally speaking, movies take like 2 years or something from pre-production to release.
Yeah,
and this was a year, like just a solid year for almost everything. I mean, he had written the script or was just putting the finishing touches on the script. And the fact that he completed this movie within that year and you know, kind of fulfilled his promise to have it released was, you know, shocking and impressive in itself, I think.
Yeah. I'm excited for... I hope this is true, but it's been speculated his next film is going to be like a 1930 gangster film.
Okay. I've heard rumor of a Western, which I think would be awesome.
Which would also be cool.
So.
You know? I'm up... Whatever he does next, I'm up for it.
Definitely.
Number two on my list is 500 Days of Summer. This movie is on a constant loop on my iPhone and at my house. I love this movie. I can watch it over and over again and not get tired of it.
Speaking of films that aren't in chronological order.
Yeah.
Yeah. This film wouldn't be my number two or my number five, but I would definitely say in the top ten. I didn't make a list this year other than just what I was making up on the spot.
Another feature debut, by the way.
Yeah, Mark Webb.
This film, I love this story.
Yeah, I did too.
I think for any guy who's gone through something like that can completely relate. And I wish like I had this film sooner in life. I think a lot of guys may have.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
I would you'd be able to see the sign sooner.
Yeah.
You bitch. Damn you.
Yeah. So
I know both Mazer and I have gone through the hell of
we've known each other
women.
Too long.
I love this movie too. I think I only saw it once, and I'm worried about seeing it again because I feel like...
It doesn't.
Yeah, dude, it doesn't at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just as good. That's good to
I
hear.
Love this movie.
Just as good the eighth time around.
All right, that's good to
or
hear.
Or, like, the 40th, which I'm on
yeah.
right now.
I think,
I'm watching it on my iPhone right now as we're doing this podcast. What would you say was the
previous kind of 500 days of summer of the previous day? Would you, like, say anything or something? Like, man. Is there another film, like, High Fidelity? Is there a film that...
This High Fidelity comes close, I think. Something
this
like
would
that.
Would this be the new generation's High Fidelity? Or
just the male aspect
yeah.
of this kind of film?
I don't know. For some reason, Garden State pops into my head, but it's not. They're not really the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. It's a hard one to put a stamp on.
Yeah. Well, that's...
It's
that's
not a romantic comedy.
Yeah, it's a testament
but
to
it
Mark
is,
Webb.
And but it's
writers.
Not.
It's not.
It's sad, and it sucks to see what this main character goes through.
But it's awesome.
But yeah. you love it. Yeah. Why
and it
is
ends,
that?
And it ends on a hopeful note. So.
And it does yeah. end on a hopeful note. You know, it's uplifting.
Yeah.
And Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel, they've acted previous before together.
Yeah.
And they've talked about doing tons of stuff. I'd love
well,
to see them
you,
yeah,
you,
over
and over
great,
again.
They
were incredible together on screen. Mm-hmm.
You,
amazing.
You did a roundtable with them, I think.
Yeah.
Your question. What was your question? You compared them to Leo and Kate?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because
that's a good comparison.
I compared them to Manic, which they did close to 10 years ago, or exactly 10 years ago. No, not even close. Okay. I compared Manic to Revolutionary Road and... 500 days to their Titanic, and they got a kick out of it. Like yeah, I never thought about that. And I'm like, well, also Zoe, she kind of sings and everything. And I pointed out that Joseph Gordon-Levitt gets punched and everything he does. And Zoe's like, I don't think I've ever seen a film where you don't get punched in the face. She's like, I'm really trying to think hard. And he gets punched in the face, you know, in 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah,
it's a great film. I saw this at the very beginning of the year at the Sundance Film Festival. It was my favorite film at the Sundance Film Festival. It's carried its way through all year long, and it's, you know, still one of my favorite films of the year. So
well, I think 500 Days of Summer and Mystery Team, which is an honorable mention,
yeah,
are like the two films you just really
trying
push
to
behind.
Push, you know, trying to get people make people aware of those because they're both freaking incredible films. Number one on my list is
dun, dun, dun.
Star Trek. Surprise. I don't think it's any surprise.
This was almost
there.
My number one. This was almost my number one.
The reason
this
it was an emotional journey for me. I'll
yeah.
be honest with you. It was an emotional epic journey. You know, Avatar. It didn't have Avatar. Didn't seem to have the emotional. I don't know.
The first, like, 10 minutes of Star Trek,
yeah,
you're
like,
just like,
you can't, you're just
you're
so
in,
into
you're,
it.
Like, emotionally connected to the film.
Exactly.
And I don't know anyone who hasn't, in that opening sequence, got, like, been pretty much, I'm on board.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the fact that they pulled off a reboot in any sense at all.
That works.
Yeah, that works.
For the regular people and for the fans.
Would yeah. put it on anyone's kind of top 10 list, but the fact that it's even more than that.
Yeah.
That you're like, this is a franchise that will go on for hopefully another decade or two.
Yeah.
If it's in
Abrams'
hands.
Yeah, if it yeah. remains in the right hands.
Please let it remain in the right hands.
That'll be interesting.
Please don't
see.
X-Men this.
Yeah.
This franchise.
Yeah.
So, there's something about this that I'm emotionally connected with me that I didn't emotionally connect with in Avatar.
I was just impressed by every detail.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Was truly translated in a way that made it cooler than it ever has been and made it palatable to the general audience who like Star Trek. Like, this movie made so much money, and I think people who were never interested in Star Trek, just from the trailer, were actually interested
exactly.
in actually getting into it.
Exactly.
Well, the same feelings I had with the Lord of the Rings trilogy, in that the casting was so pivotal and perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And that there were so many little last changes in this film that made the film work as it did. Like, the opening scene was going to be, like, maybe, like, 20 minutes in. Like, the two opening scenes were going to be completely different.
There was an opening sequence with the birth
Spock
that was cut.
Yeah. And just, just little things. You go, this movie was meant to be made.
This way.
Yeah, this way. The casting. Like, no one, I can't imagine other people cast in the roles for these iconic roles that could have easily gone into parody. They walked that line perfectly.
They found a way to reinterpret the characters. Well, not even reinterpret. It's just they were these characters.
Yeah.
Without question.
Yeah, definitely. But love the movie. I don't know. I haven't met anybody yet who hasn't liked it. So.
Okay. Shall we just go through some honorable mentions so we're not getting killed in the
comments?
Check through some of those, yeah.
Mystery Team. It's definitely which we briefly talked about here.
It's a hilarious film.
Awesome. Hilarious.
I'm really looking forward to seeing this because I haven't gotten a chance to check it out.
This comedy group, Derek Comedy, are freaking brilliant at comedy. I think they have a huge future ahead of them with comedic films.
Well, they already have such a huge following online with their short videos on YouTube. Like 15 million hits.
Wow.
20 million hits on a lot of these videos. Each. Like not just for all, like each of them have outrageous amount of hit. Like it's addictive to watch, and I can't wait for this to come out somewhat wide or come out on DVD so you can just watch this over and over
and share
again.
It. I think it'll be once it gets into into campuses on disc.
It's a party movie, dude. Yeah, you bring your friends over, you have them watch this. Everyone's having a great time watching it and laughing. I mean, it's absolutely hilarious.
It's not such an amazing structure that you feel like you have to watch. You like you can jump in at any point.
Exactly.
And you start laughing.
Exactly.
Zombieland's another huge film. You guys didn't get to see it, but me and Venkman did. But just one of those films that just, first of all, Woody Harrelson, amazing in Zombieland. Just like, you're like, why isn't this guy doing more comedy?
Yeah.
He's doing all these, even like 2012, that's such a throwaway role, even though he probably enjoyed it and huge box office hit.
Yeah.
But that, and you know, I want to see The Messenger. I heard he's amazing in that, but Harrelson, Cheers, the guy belongs in the comedy genre. The guy's brilliant. And Jesse Eisenberg, Abigail Breslin, just the whole cast. It's one of just a feel-good movie, and a feel-good zombie movie. When does that really happen? Where you're just like stoked and laughing your butt off on a zombie movie besides Shaun of the Dead or some of the more tongue-in-cheek zombie films, but amazing. The Fantastic Mr. Fox. You guys saw that?
Yeah, honorable. Yeah, I saw that.
I didn't see it. I honestly, I don't know what happened. I've heard nothing but great things, though.
Yeah.
I think
I've missed a lot of movies this year.
I think the film,
that's why I feel I didn't want to
stylistically just feels classic. It feels like it's something you've seen before. And I think we'll see as time goes on that this will probably hopefully get more acclaim and it will be more on people's lists and will be remembered. I think it's something like, it's definitely, it reminds me of like those kids films that I think some of the kids films now are like a little too clean. They're a little too, like, I think part of a kid being a kid is not understanding some of the things that are happening and then learning what those are about later without parent.
There's a certain, even just from the trailers or what you guys have talked about, there's a certain magical feel that it has to it that a computer doesn't really capture that grittiness and that kind of that certain set design. It's winning all these things for design.
Yeah, it has that rough feel. The hand was involved with it.
Pixar's Up, which if a movie can get you bawling, like full on bawling within like the first like 5-6 minutes, they're doing something right, and the movie just gets better from there.
Yeah, Pixar has not really, for me, made a miss except for Cars.
Yeah.
And I think that's due to their amazing story vetting process. If anyone's ever seen a behind the scenes on...
Goes through every single filter.
Every single shot, word, moment, beat is thought out, is looked over, and is criticized internally before we ever see any of it.
Yeah.
So,
a lot of people should take a lesson from that, I think.
Yeah. It's their job.
Yeah. Well, Pixar is freaking unbelievable. They've put out, 10, 11 movies now, and almost all of them, like you said,
and
everything
I think
but Cars.
It's gotta be said, it's not what's amazing technically about the film, although it is very beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Even the 3D, I went and saw it in 3D, I'm like, I could have gone without the 3D.
Yeah, seeing it in 3D and 2D, it doesn't have a difference. I mean, it's cool because you get some depth and you just on a big screen, that's fun.
Yeah.
But it doesn't need it. I love the story, I love the characters in it. I mean, an old man and a little Boy Scout with balloons and a talking dog, and it's just it sounds so crazy, but like it works on an. It's just fun.
It's got this essence of such a like an old school adventure story, like this old like 1930s feel to it almost, and it's like this pulpy kind of thing that you would imagine would be in the same time as like the, you know, as like an Indiana Jones would be or something, and like you know, in that kind of fictional universe. But I dug this movie a lot.
Another one, Up in the Air by Jason Reitman. Ben saw this and loved it. But probably
I liked it a lot. I thought at the time that the storylines, like this movie, it covers a lot of ground. Well, excuse the pun, I guess, but it covers a lot of ground.
The anti pun,
the ironic pun. there's a lot of stuff going on here. I think it's Jason Reitman's most
realized film?
Yes, yeah, that's a really good word for it, realized. It's got a lot of different elements, but they all work very well together. Everything from the cast to the stories, and each offshoot, you know, works on its own. The only problem I had with it at the time was I didn't think that the Vera Farmiga story and the Anna Kendrick story meshed very well, but overall that's the problem that is easily overlooked, because this movie, I mean, it's emotional, it's it features fantastic performances, great
cameos
in
it too, or just like high profile cameos.
Everything's great. Jason Reitman is a fantastic filmmaker, and I'm really looking forward to what he does next.
So next one is Coraline. This film is actually, there's these films that have come out like The Corpse Bride and now Coraline that just have on the opposite end of stop motion animation of Fantastic Mr. Fox, that looks so clean that they look like they're computer animated. Coraline is from the director of Nightmare Before Christmas, and I really enjoyed this film. Obviously, not enough to say make it on my top 10, but it's definitely a movie I bought and, you know, plan on showing to my kids one day. So,
did you see it in 3D in the theaters?
Did not.
Okay.
I missed it completely in theaters, and I really wanted to see it, and I mean, I just went out and bought it. I didn't even bother to rent it.
Yeah.
Okay, another honorable mention is Watchmen. This is a film that just the geek community just kind of bashing, and then when they kind of saw some footage, really loved, and then as soon as it came out, the hype machine just died.
Although it is, I think, the best version of the Watchmen you could have ever hoped for.
That's the most important thing.
And the funny thing is, you've heard from the geeks, is it stuck too much to the book.
Yeah.
Which is
amazing.
Funny to hear.
You're like, what?
Yeah, which is hilarious. I think just the Watchmen story just isn't for everyone. Also, I think the timeliness of when the book came out compared to the movie translates differently. So all the messages and all, you know, it came out at a time when comic books were lighter and had a different feel to them. This ushered in, you know, the darker comic books that we've become more familiar with. So,
yeah, I think if this movie would have been released years down the road in the future, it might be a little bit more respected critically, just because, like you said, it's very similar. I mean, almost panel for panel in some instances, like, to the original graphic novel, with the exception, the massive exception of the ending, right?
Which I think is better in the film.
I tend to agree with you now. At the time, I was like, I freaking want my squid. But but now that I've had a little bit of time,
like, I mean,
to sit
on
back,
on the panel, it makes sense because it's leaking into every panel. But like in a movie,
it would have been too much. The movie was overblown as it is, like asking you to invest in a world that was pretty intense, and throwing that like wild thing in there. Because while I read the graphic novel, I was like, whoa, like that part really caught me off guard. I knew something was ticking down and something was going to happen, but I had no idea what it was. Yeah. Obviously, going back and reading the graphic novel again, you see the hints leading up to that, which is why the graphic novel is so amazing. And in Watchmen, they do a really good job of you know, translating, you know, what's everybody said was unfilmable to the screen in a way that at least gives us
and it makes it more a, it makes it I think maybe a little more believable, because what it does is it everything in the world is normal except for Dr. Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the spark that makes things slightly different in this world, compared to, you know, everyone else. I mean, if we talk about like the Marvel Universe, et cetera, everyone has an ability.
I think just a testament to the action and the visuals of it and the soundtrack was that my brother and my dad watched it for the first time, and Watchmen is not their kind of film at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not at all. Both, like, actually, well, Bob Neek, he was the one watching it. He likes sports movies, feel-good comedies, doesn't really like the blood, and like, our dad hates violence. And they watch Watchmen, and were just floored every second of this movie, and I was amazed, because I think the hype had kind of died down, obviously. They just watched it a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But just, I think they kind of went in without any expectations.
Yeah.
And they absolutely loved the film. So. Yeah.
Well, we get corrupted sometimes expectations and you know, the hype machine, like you said, and all
the,
that stuff.
The
so.
Thousand clips we get shoved down our
throat. Yeah, it's refreshing to kind of try to go into something fresh and or at least see somebody else do it, and then it kind of gives you a different perspective on it. Like, you can step out of this kind of geek world that we live in and just be like, okay, this is actually a pretty solid movie. So.
Well, even just like the scene with kind of the opening scene, the scene with
the comedian.
Yeah, the comedian and spoiler who knows what.
Yeah.
Fighting, like, their jaws were on the floor.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh my gosh!
Yeah.
Oh, that guy's getting his ass kicked! Like, he just loved it.
Which in the book does not feel as nearly devastating.
Like brutal as Zack Snyder makes
it. And I think what was interesting in the action in the film is you understand, even as old as the comedian, he was still tough. And he was still incredibly strong, yet who he was fighting against, no contest.
Yeah. And at the same time, not imbued with legitimate superpowers, which I think is important too, like what you're saying, how Dr. Manhattan's the only real superhero in the whole thing.
Yeah.
This movie's pretty amazing.
Okay, Invictus, which Mazur saw his own special recut of Invictus.
My own special recut.
Listen to her.
For those who didn't know or have listened to the previous podcast, I watched Invictus and a reel was switched out of place. Several reels, actually, I learned. And it was completely out of order. And the film was still good.
Which is mind-boggling.
Which is mind-boggling.
Me,
how many films do you think you could jumble up and still be a good film? Right?
Yeah.
Not many. I mean, going back to that Pulp Fiction thing we talked about, like, it takes a certain level of skill to be able to pull off, like, time shifting and things of that sort.
And that's on purpose.
Yeah.
And when I watched a film not on purpose, jump pulled up.
That's,
I like this film. I think, the resurgence of Clint Eastwood as a director, I mean, thank goodness he is still making films.
Oh, yeah.
I really wonder whether the version you saw is a better movie than the... I'm not saying... Because I didn't even see Invictus, but I'm not saying that as a knock against the film. I'm just saying I wonder if randomly that's how it turned out, you know? Like, if you have a vastly different perception of the film because of the out-of-order reels. But...
Yeah. Cool. Okay, and then an additional honorable mention is Where the Wild Things Are, which... came out and went a little flat.
Another one of those things, kind of like Watchmen, where the hype, it's almost being set up to fail.
this is my thing was, have you seen the trailer? Yes. Did you like the trailer? Okay. You'll like the movie. Did you like the trailer? No? You're not going to like the movie. Yeah. That was pretty much my way of telling people.
Well, and I love the film, but for a lot of people, the fact that the trailer captured everything so well.
The trailer is better.
Well, it's almost like, well, I have all these... it made me feel all these feelings.
Yeah.
And it didn't give me anything more.
It was a really powerful trailer. It's one of the best trailers of the year, I think. Yeah. That
should be an award, Trailer of the Year.
Well, they have that. They have that.
The Golden Trailer Awards, I think is what it's called.
But, yeah, a lot... And it's like people, like, it could have just, you know, just just the trailer and release it as a short
film. But you know, I love this film. It captures, I for myself, just what it was like to be a kid and be wild and not, like, get why things are going on in your head and kind of just acting out. And it's just, you don't know any better because you're a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that the studios gave Spike Jonze the kind of overall creative control that they did with this project. Because, I mean, it's adapting a, what, 10-page book or something into a feature-length film.
Which, if you, with all the words in it, I mean...
You can really read it within less than, like, 2 minutes.
Probably,
Not even that. You could read... If you had the text on a single page, you could read it in about 30 seconds if you wanted to.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all the text that there is in it. And, they found a way to expand the story. I love Spike Jonze's choice of having actual monsters, people in suits.
Yeah.
And mixed with the CG.
Mixed with the CG face, and it's completely seamless. And I think, you know, if this was in the hands of another director, we would have seen a story that was more involved, and they would have had to find something. They would have had to do all the sorts of, like, regular story-type things you would have had. And I think it just stayed true to the book.
Mm-hmm. Well, it reminded me a little bit... I mean, the circumstances kind of reminded me a little bit of Ron Howard's adaptation of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Mm-hmm. A small, really small book being blown up into a feature-length film. And while I really enjoyed that movie, mostly for its production design and Jim Carrey's ridiculous over-the-top performance... Spike Jonze, I mean, it's such a... I mean, they're on polar opposite ends of the spectrum, you know?
Like, yeah, just... and the Grinch is, like, all fleshed out. But all just, details and
you're gonna alienate some people by adding anything at all.
Yeah. I
mean, what do those people expect?
Yeah.
They expect a 10-minute movie,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. I think as time goes on, this will be a film that actually ages very, very well.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's something that, you know, you're gonna see on a lot of people's shelves for their Blu-ray collections.
Cool.
So, next week, we are going to be just talking about movies of the last decade, and we went through 2009. So we're going to talk about top films of the decade. We'll probably have a longer list, and maybe, who knows, even a longer podcast. We might just skip box office numbers, because I don't think anything else is coming out next week, really.
Yeah.
So, this was Geek Tyrant Weekly, number 58, and we'll see you guys next week.